You are now listening to the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 63rd episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter. My account is at ItalianoCalcio. Check the link in my Twitter bio for all the links you need to help support and listen to my podcast. So we will start off this 63rd episode of the podcast by talking about Italy's recent World Cup qualifiers. Now, the good news is we set the all-time record with 36 games in a row unbeaten. And that's the good news. So on Thursday this past week, we drew against Bulgaria 1-1. That helped us tie the record with Spain and Brazil at 35 games. And as I'm recording this on Monday morning, yesterday on Sunday, we drew 0-0 against Switzerland in Basel. And that set the record at 36 games in a row. So that's the good news. It's obviously a remarkable run. It's a run that, and a record that Mancini deserves a lot of credit since he's taken over and really built this Italian team back up from the dismay and the horror show that was failing to qualify for that 2018 World Cup. So Mancini, his whole coaching staff deserves a lot of praise. Of course, you got to give all the praise and accolades as well to the players. They're the ones on the field that actually executing Mancini's tactics and what they practice, you know, when they get together at the Coverciano and train. They're the ones who got to go out there on the field and ultimately execute. So certainly the players deserve, you know, perhaps the lion's share of this credit. And anyone who's involved with the national team deserves credit. So that's the good news, right? 36 games in a row, something for us Azzurri fans to be extremely proud of. And hopefully we could extend that streak even further. The kind of bad news, not so positive news, is the fact that we did draw two games in a row so far in World Cup qualifiers coming off our, you know, triumphant summer with winning Euro 2020. The Bulgaria draw, 1-1, was certainly a disappointing draw. Bulgaria is a team, no offense to them, that we have to absolutely beat, especially with trying to qualify for the World Cup. Now, I don't think qualification for the 2022 World Cup is in, you know, a dire mess or a sticky situation. I think we certainly will qualify, unlike, as I mentioned, we didn't do in 2018. So I don't think qualification for the World Cup is necessarily an issue, but you certainly need it to go out there and beat Bulgaria. But that was our first game back out since winning the Euro. So perhaps, you know, some celebration hangover, you know, the players getting all back together at the Coverciano training during this international break, seeing each other, you know, as a group again for the first time since their celebrations, you know, all over Italy after coming back and winning that the Euro. So perhaps there was some hangover effect from that against Bulgaria. We outplayed them undoubtedly, like, created so many chances, should have easily won that game, as I mentioned. The only goal we conceded kind of came off of an Alessandro Florenzi mistake, but we had to take that 1-1 draw. Yesterday on Sunday, we played Switzerland, who we know is certainly a much more tougher opponent. Switzerland are a good team, but a team that we handled fairly easily in the group stage at the Euro this summer. So I didn't really doubt the fact that we could at least get a draw and break the record at 36 games, but I felt that there was a little bit more pressure for us to come out and perform yesterday and come away with the win in Switzerland, given the fact that we did just, you know, draw against Bulgaria. You know, had we beaten Bulgaria, I think the draw yesterday would have been a little bit easier to swallow. But, you know, you don't want to see your team draw two games in a row, again, especially when we should have beat Bulgaria. We played pretty good against Switzerland. If either team had a win, I know I'm a bit biased, but I would say Italy certainly outplayed Switzerland a bit. We all know about the Jorginho missed penalty. He you know, has that slow stutter step approach, and it's worked in the past for him. Obviously, he's had a lot of success with it. We know he missed the PK that could have won the Euro for Italy. Jordan Pickford saved it. Fortunately, Gianluigi Donnarumma saved Saka's penalty, and we still won the Euro. But at this point, you know, I'm wondering if Jorginho clearly has to change his approach when he takes his next penalty. You know, the goalies know what's coming, that stutter step, that slow approach. At this point, you know, the cat's out the bag. Whatever, you know, I know these goalies study these penalty takers leading up to games, but for whatever reason, it was successful. But now two times in a row, he's had his penalty saved. I would love to see Jorginho his next two penalty kicks that he gets to take, just go up there and blast it and hit it as hard as he can. And if it gets saved, big deal, you'll live with that. I never really fault a penalty taker if his penalty is saved, if he hits it as hard as he can. When they try to do these little cute things and slow approaches and try to get creative like that, and it gets saved, I think that certainly leaves you out to dry more and certainly leaves you open to more criticism. Now, when it works, obviously, You know, we all think it's the greatest thing. You think about Pirlo's Cucchiaio type penalty approach and whatnot. So when it works, again, it puts a smile on everyone's face. It kind of makes it more fun to talk about that penalty approach compared to just going up there and blasting it. But again, you do leave yourself open to more criticism. So next time, I certainly want to see Jorginho just go up there and hit it as hard as he can and bury it. And again, if it gets saved, so be it. And then after he kind of takes that approach or the penalty, then, you know, he'll have the goalie guessing next time whether he's going to do his slow stutter step approach or he's going to hit it as hard as possible. But at this point, the goalies kind of have figured Jorginho out. It's in Jorginho's head. There was a great piece that I tweeted out on Twitter about his article in the Player Tribune that Jorginho wrote himself. And he talked about, you know, even though we went on to win that Euro, that missed penalty, he still thinks about every single day. And he says the only reason he was able to really get up from it is because the fact that Italy did win it. And, you know, Donnarumma bailed him out by saving the penalty on Saka. Or else, obviously, if Italy went on to lose that, Jorginho would have probably never got up from that missed penalty. But even though they won, even though they were triumphant this summer, Jorginho openly admitted that he still thinks about it and it still haunts him. And, I'm sure that was creeped in his mind yesterday when he went up to take that penalty. And even if he scored it, it would probably not have totally exorcised the demons he's dealing with from that miss against England. But it would have kind of made him feel a bit good. But now that he's missed another one, had it saved again, I'm sure his mindset is not very strong in terms of when he goes to take his next penalty. And there was an interesting moment a little bit later on in the game yesterday where Insigne was kind of shoved to the ground in the box and the Switzerland defender really didn't make an attempt to play the ball at all. And I kind of thought it could have been a penalty, but it was brushed off and never really even considered. And I turned to my brother who I was watching the game with and I said, you know, I wonder if that penalty was awarded to Italy. Would Jorginho come up and take it again? Or you know, would his teammates want Jorginho to take the penalty again and try to, say, we still believe in you. We still are confident in you. And you know, even if you miss this one again, we're still supporting you. Or would Jorginho kind of turn to one of his teammates like, you know, Lorenzo Insigne, who we know is a good penalty taker, and say, this one's for you. Mentally, I can't take this penalty. Unfortunately for Italy, that penalty wasn't awarded. We'll have to wait and see. They play Lithuania on Wednesday, assuming Jorginho starts. And if Italy are awarded a penalty at any point in that game, we'll see if he's the one who steps up to take it, or does he kind of just defer to now one of his other teammates to handle the penalty going forward. But again, disappointing draw against Switzerland, a team I felt we should have beat. There's very few teams in my mind that I never think Italy should have beat. I'm always very confident and bullish about Italy. And always feel that they should win. And now when we play Lithuania on Wednesday, again, I'm recording this Monday morning. Wednesday we play Lithuania in a World Cup qualifier. No disrespect to Lithuania, but the same way I felt against Bulgaria. Absolutely got to go out there and get 3 points. You cannot settle for a draw in this game. At that point, a draw would be looked at as a major failure and a disappointment. Especially coming off these two draws, we have to go out there and beat Lithuania and handle them easily. Not even just eke out a 1-0 win. It's got to be like 3-0, 4-0, just total domination. I think that's what we need to see to kind of get this Azzurri team back on track. But at the same time, there should be no reason why anyone should be panicking. The fact that they won the Euro certainly gives them some leeway, and we have to be confident in this team and what Mancini has been doing. I know it was the hot topic leading into the Euro. It was the hot topic during the Euro, and it's still been the hot topic now in these two World Cup qualifiers, Ciro Immobile and what we do with that striker position. Immobile has not played fairly well in these two games, and he certainly is leaving himself open to plenty of criticism with his poor play. From an attacking standpoint, Italy have looked dangerous, and Insigne's played well. Chiesa played well in the Bulgaria game that he started. He scored a goal, obviously. He came off the bench in the Switzerland game and played all right. Domenico Berardi started yesterday. He played pretty good. He had one really good scoring situation he should have buried, and that certainly could have changed the balance of the game. I'm sure Mancini is trying to give Immobile every shot he could, and he certainly is. Obviously, he's still running him out there as his starting striker. He probably sees, you know, how hard he's working in training, and there's certainly more Immobile provides and he's doing on the field than just scoring goals. But at the end of the day, that's really what he's on that field to do, is to score goals. And we know how lethal and how deadly he is with Lazio. And that's what's so frustrating, that he's not that same player with the Italian national team. And there's plenty of reasons, you know, for why that could be. Obviously, the chemistry and the camaraderie. Not that he's not close with his teammates and they don't have some chemistry, but of course, with your club team, you're practicing and training with those players each and every day, way more than you are with your national teammates. There's a lot of reasons why his goal scoring, you know, prowess is certainly not at the same level it is with his club teams. You know, even when he was at Torino, obviously he was a lethal scorer. Now with Lazio, that's all he's been doing is scoring goals, and And it certainly is frustrating, and you wonder if it's time for Mancini to give Belotti the keys to the starting position. Raspadori has been a player on the rise, certainly, and someone who Mancini has shown some faith in. Can Moise Keane certainly work his way back into favor and become that starting striker for Italy? Gianluca Scamacca, the Sassuolo, the young striker that, you know, Azzurri fans have been hearing about for a while, big, tall striker, maybe he's going to be the option. It'll be interesting to see against this against Lithuania on Wednesday if Mancini sticks with Immobile. Certainly he could bench Immobile, and it might not necessarily be because of poor performance, but three games in this close proximity of time in less than a week is a lot of games, and certainly we saw Chiesa and not start against Switzerland. He's trying to rest some players, so perhaps we will see Immobile bench against Lithuania. That doesn't necessarily mean it has to do with his poor play in these two games. It could be more just of rest, but I would like to see Mancini give another striker a run out there and a start against Lithuania. I'm a big Immobile fan. He's one of my favorite players. As I said, it's unbelievable what he's able to do with Lazio and when he wears that Lazio shirt. Obviously, we all wish he could be that prolific with the Azzurri, but it just hasn't happened. I'm not saying you give up on him by any means, but again, three games in less than a week is certainly justifiable to give Immobile a rest, and it doesn't have to necessarily be spun as Mancini benching him because of his poor play. So I think Mancini has an easy out to bench Immobile and run out one of these other strikers. Perhaps Raspadori would get that shot on Wednesday. We'll have to see what happens there. But two disappointing draws so far in World Cup qualification. Again, don't jump off the Azzurri ship just yet. I fully expect us to get 3 points against Lithuania. There's been plenty of positives to take away from those two games so far. Certainly some things to still be scratching head about. One of the things, as I mentioned, is Immobile, which has been an issue and a hot topic for a long time with the Italian national team. But we're getting a lot of positive play. Chiesa is still playing at a high level in that Azzurri shirt. Insigne has looked outstanding. Locatelli has played well so far. Defensively, we're still pretty strong. Donnarumma's making saves when he needs to for the most part. So plenty of positive things to take away from these two draws. We are the all-time record holders with 36 games in a row, unbeaten streak. Hopefully we'll make it 37 on Wednesday, but I just wanted to share a few thoughts regarding the recent international action with the Azzurri. All right, so it's been a little while since I put out a podcast. I kind of took a little week or so off. Final week of summer vacation for me. For those of you who may or may not know, I am a teacher, and later this week I jump back into the new school year, which I'm excited about, but certainly the summer is a great time to recharge my battery, and I wanted to take some of these final few days of summer to rest and charge up. So I never put out a podcast last week when the summer mercato closed, so I just wanted to share some thoughts about the mercato and just touch upon a few signings that I really liked. Tammy Abraham for Roma, obviously we've already seen in his first two games so far, really positive impact he has made for the Giallorossi, scoring a goal, providing two assists. Such a dynamic player, and he's one of the players that I'm most intrigued to follow this season and see how he, you know, makes the jump from the Premier League to Serie A. How does he handle, you know, playing in a club like Roma, who has so much pressure on them and there's such high expectations on this club always? He's now the striker, you know, replacing Dzeko. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Tammy Abraham, and so far he's built up a lot of goodwill with those Roma fans, given his strong performances out the gate. Mourinho seems to be a big fan of his, and if Tammy Abraham can keep performing at a high level, certainly the Roma fans will keep loving him, and he'll build up that goodwill, and it'll just be a positive situation. What I see from Tammy Abraham so far, it kind of reminds me of when Victor Osimhen kind of played his first few games for Napoli last season in Serie A. He just changes the balance of a game and kind of attacks the defense and throws them off balance and, you know, confuses these defenders and just kills them with his height, his pace, his speed and agility and athleticism. And that's kind of what I've seen from Tammy Abraham. It reminds me of Victor Osimhen last season. And if you remember Osimhen, when he played his first few games for Napoli before obviously the COVID and injury situations plagued this season, it just, like, he would come off the bench and it was like a light bulb turned on and whatnot. And it was just totally a different approach that he provided to the Napoli attack. And I see that with Tammy Abraham. So I fully expect Abraham to have a really strong season. I think that was a home run signing for the Giallorossi. Absolutely a great signing for them. One I really liked. Another signing I like, perhaps not as sexy as a name and as didn't get as much attention, was Tommaso Pobega joining Torino on loan. So far, Torino have started the season with two losses under their new coach, Ivan Juric, which is certainly not what they were hoping for. And I think a lot of us, especially myself, I know I have, I expect Torino to be a much better team this season and make a significant jump. you know, compared to a team that has floundered towards the bottom of the table these past couple seasons. You're expecting Ivan Juric to work some of that magic he was able to do at Verona. And I think Paul Bega is a really good signing for them. We know, you know, he kind of became more of a household name among Serie A fans last season with Spezia. His ability to play in the midfield, come forward and score some goals, what we saw him do for, you know, Spezia last season under Vincenzo Italiano. He certainly took a big step forward in his career. He's owned by Milan, but Milan knew, you know, he probably wasn't going to get enough playing time this season, given what Milan are trying to do and the goals that they have this season. They weren't totally, you know, ready to commit to working Paul Bega in consistently, and they did the right thing. They loaned him out to Torino, which is a nice move up from Spezia, and we'll see what he could do under Ivan Juric. I think he has the perfect coach to blossom under and learn from and elevate his game, and I'm sure the Rossoneri are hoping one day that he'll return to Milan and could be a big player for them and contribute a lot. Another signing I like that isn't necessarily a marquee signing either. I know I've kind of started to focus on lower signings, if you will, but Simi being signed by Salernitana, another Spezia player from last year with Paul Bega on that Spezia team that surprised everybody to stay up. He's a 20-goal scorer from last season. He's a really good player. And look, Salernitana are certainly one of the favorites to go down and be relegated. They very well made this season. They started the season with two losses. But I think that this team has some fight in them. They showed in that first game of the season against Bologna where they nearly won. They almost nearly came away with the draw. They ended up losing. Round two, they pretty much laid down for Roma. You're going to expect that when Salernitana play the likes of Roma, Lazio, Napoli, Milan, Inter, Juve, these top teams, they're probably going to lose most of those games. Maybe they could fight hard and earn one or two draws against those top teams out of the multiple games that they will play against them. But it's against everybody else, right? Everybody other than those top six, seven teams in Serie A, Salernitana need to absolutely fight hard and get some wins against them, earn draws certainly, and minimize their losses against those other teams. And I look at, you know, how they played against Bologna, and I certainly say that they're capable of doing that. And they haven't really fully integrated Simi into this team yet. And he's a player that if he could replicate what he did last season for Spezia, I look at this Salernitana team as a dangerous team. I've liked what Federico Bonazzoli has done so far from the striker position. So I think between he and Simi, they could provide Salernitana with that goal-scoring power. And often when you see teams come up from Serie B, one of the problems that they have is they're not able to score goals consistently. And that's what ultimately does them in and gets them relegated. But I don't think that's going to be the issue with Salernitana. They signed Bonazzoli, they signed Simi, two signings I really like. They just added a veteran winger, Franck Ribéry. I know Ribéry is very much at the end of his career, but he could still provide some little sparks and magic with his experience and with his wisdom and try to pass that on to his teammates. He absolutely loves Italy, and that's why he wanted to stay in Italy, and he signed up to play for Salernitana. He's going to be, you know, being in a beautiful city of Salerno on the coast of, you know, down there by Naples, so it's a beautiful city. So I like what Salernitana did. They're certainly trying to stay up in Serie A. That Simi signing is the big one. Signing Ribéry on a free transfer is good. I like the Bonazzoli signing as well, so that was another good signing. Obviously, one of the big signings was Juventus signing Manuel Locatelli, a player that they just pretty much targeted the entire summer. Finally got it done. We know Locatelli is one of the up-and-coming stars in Italian football, so he's a great addition to that team, and he kind of adds to that young nucleus that Juventus are trying to build the future around. Players like he, Chiesa, Dybala, Kulusevski, De Ligt. There's certainly a good nucleus there at Juve. We know the season hasn't started the way they would have liked, and there's some reason to be a little nervous if you're Juve, but that blend of those young players, they also signed Kyle Jorge. We'll see, you know, what type of impact he can make. They brought back Moise Keane. So they certainly are building a nice young nucleus for the, you know, very much the present moment. These are players that certainly will contribute this season, guys like Chiesa, Locatelli, right, and Moise Keane. But I really like the Locatelli signing. He provides Juventus with something they were missing last season in their midfield, which was one of the reasons why the team struggled and really fell out of that Scudetto race early on, or a lot earlier than they would have liked last season. So I love the Locatelli signing. I wanted to just talk a second about, you know, them selling Cristiano Ronaldo. And I know there's been some Juve fans that say it's a good move, right? That they're saving a lot of salary money, and that certainly is true. But if you look at just the on-field impact that selling Ronaldo is going to have, there's been some people saying that, you know, he affected the way this team played. It was, you know, he affected how the tactics, the philosophy, the approach to the game that maybe didn't suit all of his teammates around him. But at the end of the day, Cristiano Ronaldo was a player that averaged 30 goals in Serie A for the three seasons he was with Juve. That is not an easy goal-scoring total to just replace. As I said, they brought in Kyle Jorge, they brought in Moise Keane. We know Moise Keane is a good young player. His first time around with Juve, he showed he could score goals and score some big critical goals. Last season at PSG, he provided plenty of firepower there. But he's not going to be a 30-goal scorer, at least not this season, at least not yet. Who knows what Kyle Jorge will be? I don't know enough about him. And to expect him to just come in his first season in Italy, making that jump from Brazil to Serie A, to expect him to, you know, be anything close to what, you know, Juventus need in terms of goal scoring ability, it would be just unfair to put on Kyle Jorge. They have Morata, they have guys like Kulusevski, they have Dybala, they have Chiesa. There is plenty of players that could score goals, but there's no one who is going to provide those goals as consistent and at the volume that Cristiano Ronaldo was able to do. So it's not that easy to just snap your fingers, lose Ronaldo and say you'll be fine. That's 30 goals that they just let walk right out the building. We know Ronaldo was pushing for the sale. Who knows? Juventus said they weren't going to sell him, that he was going to stay here. Obviously, we know that sometimes they just do that as eyewash and for negotiation reasons and whatnot. But you wonder if Juventus really are happy to move on from his salary. I'm sure they are. But in terms of on the field, again, 30 goals is not easy to replace. And I don't know that Juventus did enough to replace that. They should be fine offensively. As I said, there's a lot of depth there. But none of those players are that volume type scorer that Ronaldo is. And I know, you know, his last game for Juve was when he came on in the second half in week one against Udinese. He obviously didn't start that game because of the transfer speculation. He scored a last second header that looked like the game winner. And then obviously VAR overturned that he was offside. So obviously it did not count. But you just see how special the player Ronaldo is. We all know he is as special and as dynamic as anyone in this world, along with a guy like Leo Messi. And it's that moment of brilliance and that level of class that Ronaldo brings that in an eye blink, he could absolutely change the balance of a game. And again, on top of those 30 goals, on top of that special ability to just change the game in the blink of an eye, that's a big loss for Juventus, in my opinion. And one, I think they're going to feel the loss of Ronaldo more than perhaps some fans are putting it out there. I think some fans are fixating on the saving the money of the salary, which is certainly a positive for Juventus, given, you know, the effects of the pandemic have had. But on the field, that is an absolute hole that they just created in this team. We'll see if they're able to get up from it. So far, the season has not gone well for them. They've struggled to score some goals this season. Only 2 goals out the gate, both coming against Udinese. We'll see what happens. And one of those goals is from Juan Cuadrado. Not that there's anything wrong with getting a goal from your wingback. And Cuadrado has scored some goals over his career. But in terms of their offensive players, their only goal so far in these first 2 games has come from Dybala. So they need to find someone that's going to step up, provide those consistent goals that Ronaldo was able to do for his 3 seasons at Juve. I think it's a massive, massive hole that they created, but those are just a few thoughts on that Ronaldo sale to Manchester United. So that will do it for the 63rd episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That would be greatly appreciated to help us grow. Feel free to spread the word of the Calcio Corner podcast to any friends or family members that you think would enjoy a Calcio-centric podcast. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.